Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Northern Arc Capital Q1 FY26 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Chintan Shah. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Viren. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Q1 FY26 earnings conference call for Northern Arc. We have with us from the management, Mr. Ashish Mehrotra, MD and CEO, Mr. Atul Tibrewal, CFO, Mr. Partha Sarathy Ralawandi, Group Risk Officer and Governance Head, and Mr. Chetan Parmar, Head Investor Relations. I would like to thank Northern Arc Management for giving us the opportunity to host this call and congratulate them for a good set of numbers. So now, without further ado, I would now like to hand the floor over to the management. Thank you, and over to you, Ashish, sir.
You are recording again. Hey, thank you very much, Chintan. Appreciate your kind words. Good evening, everyone. Delighted to welcome you on today's call. Thank you for joining us today's conference call to discuss Northern Arc Capital's performance for the quarter one ending June 30th, 2025. I'm also joined this call by my colleagues, Atul Tibrewal, our CFO, Partha Sarathy Ralawandi, our Group Risk Officer and Head of Governance, Chetan Parmar, Head of Investor Relations, and Jigar Sethia, Head of Strategy. As we step into 2026, it is important to acknowledge that we are coming off rather an eventful fiscal year, i.e., FY25, which was marked by several headwinds, including a decline in credit growth.
This call will be recorded.
Microfinance segment, delay in rate transmission, regulatory shift in MFI and digital lending space, global macroeconomic volatility, and these factors created significant challenges across the lending landscape. However, as we enter into FY26, we are beginning to see some early signs of recovery. We witnessed two rounds of rate cuts from the regulator, offering much-needed relief both in terms of pricing and liquidity. The macro indicators are turning positive. Rising consumption demand, increase in fixed capital investments by large corporates, which we believe will expect to flow downstream to MSMEs, strong agricultural prospects supported by above-normal monsoon forecast, continued capital push by the government. All this bodes well for the economy and sets a positive growth momentum for the year ahead. Having said that, we do expect the residual impact of FY26 stress to linger through the first half of the year. But as we approach the festival season, we anticipate the credit environment to stabilize, allowing the industry to regroup, reallocate resources efficiently. Further amplifying this, in the RBI's recent rate cut, combined with reduction in the risk weight for bank lending to NBFC, this sends a clear, constructive signal reinforcing the regulator's intent to support credit flow, easing liquidity constraints, and promote sustainable growth. As we begin FY26, our aim is to carry forward the lessons we've learned from the last year, headwinds, and ride the regulatory tailwinds to build more resilient, responsible, and a high-performing business. Quarterly business performance. Let me now turn and talk more about quarter one performance. I'm pleased to share that we recorded the highest-ever quarter one placement volume in Northern Arc history. This serves as a strong indicator of revival of credit demand that we've been anticipating. Traditionally, Q1 is seasonally a soft quarter for credit uptake. This year's performance was further impacted by the residual impact from FY25, leading to the cautious deployment of growth, ongoing geopolitical headwinds, and continued weight on the sentiments. As a result, overall credit growth remained muted at about 12% on a year-on-year basis. Growth was predominantly led by our MSME business, which has been a strategic posture. Our AUM in the MSME business grew by about 34%. This was followed by growth in the consumer finance segment, which grew by 25%. And our intermediate retail, which is more a credit solution business, grew by about 12%. However, if we include the growth in the rural finance business, the overall growth of Northern Arc would be 20%. In the rural finance segment, we are seeing meaningful improvement. The PAR zero accretion has reverted to March 24 level at 0.5%, primarily driven by the broader recoveries across most of the geographies, excluding Karnataka, while in Karnataka, as we started showing early signs of stabilization, we believe there's still a significant headroom for further improvement, and we are actively working towards that. Our fee franchise, which is a unique fee franchise, saw a strong traction as well, with the recorded placement volume and a consistent accretion in our funds business. Our core fee coming from a placement and the fund management grew by about 24% on a year-on-year basis, while the balance sheet grew by about 12%. This reinforces our strategic posture of building a credit solution ecosystem, not just pure balance sheet-led model. Credit quality and risk management. Our credit quality continues to be best in class, driven by proactive risk management and conservative provisioning policy. We continue to maintain a high-quality book, prudently provide for stressed assets and unsecured exposures. Having said that, the credit cost remains elevated during the quarter due to the tail impact of FY25 stress. However, we believe the initiatives being undertaken across should help us going forward, i.e. essentially driven by responsible and sustainable lending. Implementation of MFIN guardrails. We've ensured that all the assets under the rural finance are now under CGFMU guarantee scheme and strengthening our collection infrastructure. This will help stabilize delinquencies going forward. Given the improvement in the environment, we expect H2. We anticipate credit costs to land somewhere between 2.5 to about 3%, or more importantly, between 2.7 to 2.9%. On liquidity and capital, our liquidity and the funding remain well capitalized. Atul will talk about it, and I don't want to steal his thunder, but fair to say we are top quartile among our peers in the managing our liability franchise. But good to dwell a couple of minutes as we look at strategic and way forward. Given that the strong foundation and the growth over the next 3 years, as we continue to execute our strategy, we are well positioned to achieve a growth target of 20 to 25% annually, essentially driven by big growth in the direct-to-customer business, taking our mix to 70%, which will be predominantly led by lending to MSME and consumer and rural finance. We will continue to judiciously expand our intermediate retail business to build a unique and a very powerful fee franchise, which will help us gain incremental 30 to 40 basis point on return on asset, which essentially comes from us, which reflects in a loaded NIM. Our credit conscious approach will help us reduce and ensure that the cost, credit cost on a year-on-year basis remains well within the outlook we've shared, and operating efficiency to ensure we continue to capitalize and leverage on our current capabilities to get better expansion in our net interest margin, and cost remains within the range bound of 3.6 to 3.9%. With solid execution, we expect the ROA to get to 3.7 to 4. With ample growth headroom, we are confident of delivering ROE in the range of 16 to 18% over the next 3 years. We are excited about the journey ahead and are confident in our ability to execute, capitalize on emerging opportunities and stay ahead with the principles of sustainable and inclusive growth. With that, I'll now hand over the call to Atul to walk you through Q1 numbers in detail.
Thank you, Ashish, and good evening, everyone. I appreciate you joining us for Northern Arc's Q1 FY26 earnings call. Let me walk you through the financial performance. Our assets under management stood at 13,351 crores, reflecting a growth of 12% year-on-year. And within the AUM mix, the direct-to-customer business contributed 53%, with MSME finance at 20%, consumer finance at 26%, and MFI consciously calibrated at 7%. Net interest income for Q1 FY26 stood at 298 crores, which is up 10% YOY. Net revenue, including the fee income, rose 9% YOY to 325 crores. Fee and other income grew by 8% YOY to 27 crores, driven by robust placement volumes during the quarter. Our cost of fund for Q1 FY26 was 8.9% compared to 9.3% in Q1 FY25. Incremental cost of fund for the quarter stood at 8.7% versus 9.3% in Q1 FY25, which is an improvement of close to 60 basis points. Operating efficiency also improved our OPEX ratio by 57 basis points YOY to 3.5%, aided by tighter cost control. As a result, our pre-provisioning operating profit rose 18% YOY to 207 crores, compared to 175 crores in Q1 FY25. Provisions for the quarter were 102 crores, largely due to stress in the MFI segment. We believe this stress has peaked and should moderate going forward. On a percentage basis, the overall credit cost for Q1 FY26 stood at 3%. Asset quality remains stable, with GNPA at 1.1% and NNPA at 0.6%. Profit after tax for Q1 FY26 stood at 81 crores compared to 93 crores in Q1 FY25 and 38 crores in Q4 FY25. On the liabilities front, in line with our debt strategy and AUM growth plans, we have continued to diversify our funding base with a very clear focus on long-term sources. Liquidity remains quite comfortable, with positive cumulative mismatches across all the time buckets. As of June 30th, 2025, we held surplus liquidity of around 600 crores and undrawn sanctions of over 1200 crores from various banks and institutions. Total borrowings at quarter end was 9,422 crores, with approximately 75% linked to variable interest rate, positioning us well to benefit from the decline in interest rate scenario. Our funding mix remains quite diversified, 30% from offshore and DFI sources, and 70% from domestic banks, institutions, and capital market. Tangible net worth stood at 3532 crores or 3532 crores, up 27% YOY. We have strengthened the balance sheet materially. Our debt to equity ratio improved from 3.9 in March 24 to 2.7 as of June 2025. Capital adequacy remains quite strong at 25.5%, well above the regulatory requirements, giving us ample headroom to grow the balance sheet over the next 3 years. Thank you so much. With this, I would like to open the floor for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have a first question from the line of Digant Haria from Green Edge Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on, you know, the really good performance of, you know, the intermediate credit and the consumer finance division. So my first question is on provisions, that this quarter also we had 19 crores because of the, you know, DLG provision. So from quarter, so is it safe to say that 80-85 crores of provisioning we have peaked at this number, and going ahead every quarter we'll see some bit of decline?
We've done 100% provisioning on account of DLG. There is no more residual stuff. Whatever you will see the core provisioning. Anyway, our provisioning tends to be prudent on stage 1, stage 2. If you look at our coverage, it's still upward of 50%.
Okay. So actually, it would be safe to assume that 80 crores is probably the number for, right, the peak number. And as microfinance improves, we may improve from here.
I think we're seeing, you know, if I, what I said earlier, you're seeing, you know, the indicator is the par zero accretion. If that is equivalent to 0.5%, which is what was there in last year's beginning, which is Jan 24, it tells you that, you know, broad stabilization has happened. I said Karnataka will still see a couple of more months of, there is further scope for improvement, is the right word to use. I think we are in a good position, and that's why we said if there is residual stuff, we are fairly confident as we move forward here. And we've been very cautious in our own approach dealing with this entire thing.
Right, right, right. Thanks, thanks. My second question is on, you know, the capital allocation Northern Arc. Like, you know, as an external observer, if I see, like, you know, the intermediate credit and the consumer lending, you know, they take very little OPEX and, you know, they deliver very good ROAs, ROEs, the business. But when it comes to retail, you know, it's been like 4 years now, probably takes the largest portion of the operating expenses and capital employed. And, you know, if I just do a simple sum of the parts, I think that, you know, our retail business is not even making a 0% kind of an ROA. So my question is, you know, you said that in the long term, we would want to increase the rural business, that is the MSME business. So you know, before, like, you know, what have been our learnings of the last 4 years? And, you know, like, why do we want to, you know, because this business has not given us, you know, any meaningful return over the last 2-3 years. Why are we doubling down on that? And, yeah, so that's the first question on this capital allocation.
Well, let me try and take and break this into smaller parts. We at a management and at a board level are very sharply focused at the segmental or the product profitability. That's the way we conduct our business. We allocate capital depending on where will we make both the strategic investments and where will we get the expected hurdle for return on assets. Let's use return on assets and return on equity for the change. We also know the headroom for the expansion on the return of assets as we build the business forward. Our retail business today is extremely profitable. If I look at whether it is digital lending business, which over the last year and a half, it makes very good return on assets, significantly better than what we have on an aggregate basis. Credit solution business is a very unique business, and we're building more on expansion in our ability to do lot more credit solution. Fair to say, we are very uniquely positioned. Our ability to originate large amount of retail credit, our ability to process large quantum of retail credit, our ability to run hybrid technology for the credit to flow from originators to investors, our ability to sell that credit to institutional investors, we've demonstrated that for the last 15 years. Our ability to sell that to the retail investors through our bonds platform. Our ability to invest in that credit from our fund management business, subject to right side of, if the fund has a right set of thematic opportunity for investments. Our ability to support it from our balance sheet, and our ability to manage and collect. I think that's a very powerful business, and that business, for it to generate more than 3+ return on assets, is a function of how strong the fee franchise runs. And that's why, to what we said on a forward-looking basis, as you combine all of these pieces, we will get to where we want to get to. Obviously, we dealt with the situation in the rural finance business, which is cyclical in nature, where we saw what the issues were. We were very proactive in bringing down our exposure and managing that risk. We've also now back-tested our own scorecards to where we see what kind of outcomes will we get in case such 1 in 10 year risk events occur. And I think we are pretty confident building it as we build forward. But we will be cautious and as we go about doing it.
Okay. Thanks. So you know, so specifically, Ashish, you know, the question was more for these two pieces of our business, the direct to consumer, you know, a small lab business and the microfinance business, because I think the microfinance has obviously given us a lot of pain. So between the two, like, how do we take it forward? And then, you know, are we thinking of any
forward looking basis to what I said, all these businesses, whether it's the whether it's consumer lending, whether it's MSME lending, whether it's rural finance, they will be all in the range bound, if not better, theoretically better, ideally better than what we said as an outlook to the business. And they are, barring the rural finance, at a product level, none of them are negative today. And we do hard cost allocation through going down to direct cost, support cost, management cost. We don't do incremental revenue to incremental revenue. So we take a very hard look when we look at allocation of our resources and capital.
Okay, okay. I hope, you know, we see, you know, those divisions also delivering, because, you know, it's like taken a lot of capital and OPEX. So all the best for that, Ashish. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Adarsh from Paras Rampuria. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ashish and team. Congrats on good numbers. Question on SME and consumer finance in context of some commentaries coming from peers on some problems on SME that they're facing, little more to do with small ticket SME, so qualitative comments from that side. And on consumer finance, last 12-18 months were little disruptive, models changed, DLG came in, then there are some withdrawals happening as well. So just wanted to understand, is things stabilized now? What's your outlook on these asset quality comments on these two businesses?
Okay, so I will give you not specifically to our balance sheet, but also given that we move sizable amount of assets for securitization, and given the multiple, so I'll take a broader industry view as we talk about it. You know, if you actually look at it, in the consumer finance space, three things have happened over a period of last 2 years. One, the shift away from the small ticket personal loan, buy now, pay later. That as a mix in the consumer finance space has come down. The second is the short-term high APR loans, given the RBI intervention last time on transparency and pricing. That as a mix at an industry level, we've seen the reduction. And third is more prudent, given the consumer saw finance business or the personal loan business saw a little bit of higher elevated credit cost. But as we look at it, it's broadly stabilized today. You know, as long as you're able to price for that risk, I think we're able to get right set of outcomes. In our own business, we price for it by leveraging both the FLDG and the pricing mechanism to ensure we're targeting the right set of customer cohort, which will give us a decent risk-adjusted net margin or risk-adjusted yield of about 15%, 14 to 16%. I think that's the one part. In the unsecured SME loans, we are seeing higher elevated flow rates. As a consequence of that, higher credit cost. And I think there is some amount of tightening which we have seen our peers doing it. In our case, we don't have high concentration of unsecured business loan in our balance sheet, so we are in that way protected. But on consumer, I think we've seen stabilization, because you are also targeting a better set of customer, correct? Earlier, when you were lending at 18-30% and you're lending at a short term, you had a very different target customer profile. And as you start lending for longer term, you're targeting better salary profile. So I think that we should see stabilize, that we've seen stabilization. Unsecured business loan goes through the cycle. There is a period. We've seen that across industry. But I think part of that spillover of that effect coming from MFI should also get washed out by this quarter. By H2, we should start seeing improvement in those numbers.
Thanks, Ashish. And the other question is the slide number 34 on the ROA tree walk. Our margins moved from 10 to 8.9%. Yields were down 80-90 QOQ. Part of it possibly maybe a reduction in the MFI book, but just wanted to understand, because
exactly.
The consumer book.
You picked it up right. Two things. One is the reduction in the MFI book. You saw what this book was. It's now down and we are rebuilding this book. And the second is, we've consciously exited last year some of the segment what I alluded to earlier. So as a consequence, as we rebalance the book, I think we will, our NIMs will come back to the to where they were, and they'll continue to expand with the change in the mix, with our direct-to-customer business getting towards quarter-on-quarter, inching towards 70%, what is the targeted aim is.
Perfect. And my last question, Ashish, is on credit cost. We're at 3% with some one-offs on DLG. You did mention sometime 2.5 to 2.7. Is that the exit credit cost or the average that you expect for the year?
You know, I think our outlook is that we should, while we've seen the elevated part of the residual impact from 25 coming into this quarter, coming into Q1, there is some small piece, but I think by end of the year, we should be able to end on an aggregate basis credit cost of below 3%, anywhere between 2.8 to 2.9. I think that's the outlook we will work towards. We're working very sharply to ensure, you know, our target client model remains true to get the right set of outcomes.
Perfect, decision team. Thanks for your, thanks for answering the question.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. Again, continuing on the, you know, asset quality and credit cost outlook. So broadly, if we were to sort of, you know, hear the commentaries from various lenders, I mean, there has been concerns around, of course, MFI likely bottoming out, MSME, unsecured piece, particularly some concerns, then micro-LAP is where concerns, I mean, are kind of an increased concerns. Additionally, if we look at the kind of, you know, the CV segment is also where CV or, I mean, use and new both, is where there is kind of a some players hinting at increase in stress and all. In your scheme of things, that, of course, that vehicle piece is relatively smaller, but and that too also intermediated. But from whatever you are gathering, because of course you will be seeing what kind of a trend you are seeing as far as, you know, stress buildup is concerned in the vehicle segment. So that's question one. And second, I mean, when you are sort of a kind of a hint, I mean, giving this guidance that okay, credit cost for the year should improve from here onwards, which are the segment, I mean, that is giving you sort of a more and more confidence that, I mean, you will be able to kind of do better from here? Because, I mean, here, I mean, if we look at different players, there are noise around most of the segments where you are. These are my two questions. Thanks.
Hey, Avinash, very insightful as you've connected all the dots given some of the early conversations you would have had with the peers. And I think it's fair to say, you know, MFI is a good leading indicator to how credit is being performing, correct? It's also very different operating model, but it's more group than JLG in today's context if one just step aside and reflects on it. And you've seen as the over-leveraging happened there, you saw impact of that flowing into unsecured personal loans, unsecured business loans, and so on and so forth. You've seen some of the results where it then transcended into small businesses, into commercial vehicles, and so on and so forth. Our sense is as the new guardrails come into play, and to what I said, if we're seeing an improvement in par zero accretion, this means the flow rates, the forward flow has significantly reduced and we are broadly in line to where we were in early 2024. That means we should start seeing some amount of improvement, not only in MFI, but also across as it flows forward. Further to protect, you know, we've done two things. We've also recalibrated our scorecards for our own piece because we've been doing that and, you know, to ensure that we get better set of outcomes. It might have resulted in a reduction in the approval rates, but that's, I think, fair to do during this time because you want to build a better quality high annuity income. And the second, we've then also said, listen, we've also taken CGFMU cover incrementally for all assets coming on board from March onward. So I think overall, as we see improvement in the par zero accretion in MFI, you'll see part of that impact flowing into some of the other unsecured pieces over the next 3 quarters you know, 2 to 3, 4 quarters. We'll see that. And, you know, MFI is actually the first one to call out in that segment that there is a trouble. If you're a monoline, if you're a single product pony and you're having a challenge in that product, you have no choice but to highlight that there is a challenge you're dealing with. I think that's my take. That's what we are seeing. That's exactly what we are seeing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Gupta from GM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening team. My first question was on credit cost guidance. I just wanted to understand it a bit better. Given the fact that you've reported 3% credit cost for the first quarter and you're guiding that at the end of the year you'll be at 2.8 to 2.9%, despite the fact that this quarter had DLG, which may not be there in the coming quarters, are we expecting credit cost to go up in the next few quarters? Is that what the guidance is?
No, why did I ask Partha Group President to talk about it in detail?
No, not really. The way to look at it is whatever is the credit stress that is there in the system continuing from FY25 is something that should play out by September quarter in H1 of this year, and H2 should be reasonably better. And in line with what we have been doing all this while, we have been reasonably conservative and building up the provision base that we have, both for good book and for assessed assets on the balance sheet. With reasonable amount of conservatism, we are talking about 2.7 to 2.9% being the full year credit cost. But having said that, it's not that we are expecting more stress or elevated stress than this, than what we have seen in 25. In 26, that's not the case. Obviously, there will be balance sheet growth, and there are certain segments of the business where we would plan for higher credit cost. The growth can happen in those segments, because of which we might see the ultimate credit cost landing between 2.7 to 2.9%. But if you look at it as a stress on the portfolio, I think 25 was a year, and whatever is the residual of that we are carrying in H1, we are continuing. But we don't really think that 26 or an average would be higher stressful than what we have seen in Q1 and what we have seen in 25. But having said that, it's good to be a little cautious, a little be conservative, and the guidance is something that we should be reasonably conservative about.
Okay, the question was coming from the fact that your stage 2 and stage 3 loans is showing 50 basis increase. So I was just wondering that you're expecting further slippages to happen from stage 1 to 2 or 3 in the coming quarters.
Stage 2, obviously stage 3 is not really an issue because that's already in PAR 90, and we have provided adequately as per the policy. And there is a stage 2 increment of 1.8 to 2.1%, which is pretty much in line with where we should reasonably expect the numbers to be in this environment. 96.7% stage 1 and 2.1, that is 98.8% stage 1 and 2 assets, is a comfortable position to be in.
Sure. And my second and last question is, when you're targeting a return on asset of 3.7 to 4% in the next 3 years, what kind of credit cost are you envisaging, and in terms of what kind of NIMs are you looking at, given the fact that microfinance is under duress, but you all plan to continue with that segment in the coming quarters and years?
3 years is obviously a long time, and we should budget for cycles, etc., etc. The way to look at it is, we would plan, the way the business mix is, we would plan for the credit cost to be contained in the range between 2.5 to 3, and with the expansion of the NIM and the leverage going up, and obviously we have scope for balance sheet growth at the current capital level, with all this put together, we should have reasonable RA levels, ROA, return on asset levels, and return on equity levels.
Sure, noted. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prateek Singh from Dexter Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. What's the split of sourcing of our loans for D2C book? I mean, how much is it from our own branches and from the partners? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello? Sorry, yeah. Yeah, okay. Let me. So, if you look at the D2C and split into parts, one is the digital sourcing, second is the branch-based sourcing. Branch-based sourcing is 100% between MFI and MS-secured MSME lending. Is directly through a branch network, both 360-plus branches originate. Digital lending happens through our digital partners, and we probably run the most sophisticated, high-quality lending platform. We spoke about it multiple times. We, on that platform, we underwrite anywhere between 18,000 to 20,000 loans a day. It runs. It is a very customer-centric, product-agnostic platform, and you know, so it has. That's how the split is.
Okay. And what's the blended yield on this loan, and like, how is it shared with the partners?
You know, we said in the consumer finance, we make a risk-adjusted yield of anywhere between 15 to 16.5%. On our secured SME lending business, we make a yield of about 18.5 to 19.5%. Our rural finance book, which is pretty low, we make about 24%.
Okay. And all those partnerships have FLDG in place, right?
We have all digital. What we do, we leverage the FLDG construct.
Understood. Okay. And on the monetization of our tech stack and platforms, Nimbus, NPOS, NUScore, what's the yearly revenue that we are clocking from these, like, if you can share that?
So we're seeing early traction. We're now live with two institutions in the NPOS. We are working with one large non-bank finance company and three other banks to take live. We've demonstrated in bank we're live with to do across products from an SME loan to a secured gold loan. Nobody has the capability to do so many products through a single platform. And on scorecards are now being used by two or three institutions. We are expanding that. We're making, that's why, you know, when I spoke about Credit Solution as a unique business, there are very few businesses which has full capability to originate across the retail assets or the retail lending platform to do all what is required to be done. One is to originate large quantum of credit between a 360-plus NBFCs whom we work with, to take that retail credit, to underwrite the risk of that retail credit, place that risk and process that through our own technology platform, which is Nimbus. Make it available to institutional investors. 90% of people who invest in these assets have been buying these assets from us for over 3 years. To make that available to retail investors through our own bonds platform called altifee.ai, please do download the app and use it. It's a good way to allocate some of your wealth into high yield bonds. Then is to take it, invest from a funds business, which has done really well. We've run 11 funds so far. 6 of them have closed. Our average yield over the 9 years on the performing credit is upward of 14%. Or then supported from balance sheet and service across the asset classes. So I think that's a unique capability we have, and we continue to expand fee franchise, leveraging all of that and to support what we do. More importantly, it gives us access to an inordinate amount of information and ensure that we, Northern Arc, becomes the great learning organization as we see the flow of all of these loans and the performances of these loans. So we have over 45 million time series of loan performance data. So, you know, we broadly look at it differently.
Understood.
Thank you.
And a follow-up question on the yield. Is the blended yield figure same as the average borrowing rate for the borrower? Or is it the numbers you quoted, is it post-commission?
Atul, you may have gone take that. Yeah.
Sorry, the yield that we show, you know, as part of our investor deck is the one that we charge to the end borrower. But for our digital lending business, it will be the net of the fees that we pay to our partners. So for the other businesses, it is the charge, it is the interest that we charge directly to the end customer. But for the digital lending business, which is largely the consumer business, it is the net yield, basically the yield adjusted with the servicer fees.
Okay, understood. Thank you. I'll get back into
it. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pawan from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. So my question is mainly on the personal loans. The quarter-on-quarter growth in personal loans is down to 3.3%. Is it more of a seasonal aspect or more related to calibration of scorecards you mentioned? And on the corollary, how will the growth rates look going forward? Related to this, earlier you mentioned that you're moving higher in the credit quality in personal loans. So what will happen to the yields in this segment? Yeah. Hello, could you hear me?
Yes, sir. I think you're audible.
I spoke about it earlier. Yes, we did moderate some part of consumer. That's essentially on three things. One, sensitivity in line with the fair lending code. The second is, you know, consciously exiting the short-term personal loan, which we all saw the issues it was creating. That's the second part. And the third part was also building towards a better quality customer cohort, which is a longer term rather than running on a treadmill. I think those three were very conscious decisions we made. We believe that the yield, what you're seeing compression, is largely led more by the reduction in the rural finance as a mix of our overall business. And as we recalibrate the business, we believe the yield will come back quarter on quarter to where we were. And actually, as the mix improves on a quarter-on-quarter basis to more retail, you will see expansion in the yield and in the NIM, both on account of the change in the mix of the balance sheet and also on the expansion of the fee franchise.
And how will the growth rate?
Year-on-year basis, growth is about 28%, just to correct on the consumer finance. If you refer to the slide 13, you will see that. Quarter four tends to be a better quarter. Yeah.
Is there any guidance on the growth rates going forward for personal loans and the MSME?
Sorry, the voice is not clear.
Any guidance on the growth rates for personal loans and MSME going forward?
Broadly said, we said in broadly in line with the overall guidance we've given, and we've also said specifically how we want to play in these three segments, which is MSME, consumer, and rural.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you all. Anybody else?
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhas Verma from East Green Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, Mr. Abbas, please go ahead.
I have a question on your branch network strategy. So in one of your earlier con calls, you know, you had mentioned that branch expansion.
Hello, we can't hear. Hello? Hello?
Hey. Hello?
Chetan, how are we?
The participant has left the queue.
Okay.
I would like to take the next question from Chintan, sir. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity. So, sir, just one thing on our incremental cost of funds. So, I think incremental cost of funds has seen quite a sharp decline to 8.7% versus 9.3% QOQ. And this is almost equal now to FY22 levels. Also, I see the liquidity has kind of quite inched up, improved in this quarter. So, as such means what change, I understand that it could be partly due to repo rate, but so what kind of cost of borrowing could we expect, and could you just throw some more light on the cost of funds and the liquidity front? Yeah.
All the great job you've done in building a great liability franchise.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Thanks, Ashish. So, Chintan, as you know, the incremental cost has come down definitely, but what we actually now need is to bring down the overall cost of my book. The good thing is that 75%, as you know, is variable, and unfortunately, the repo rate transmission has not yet started happening by the banks, but definitely, this is something that we will now see, and my on the book cost of fund, which is currently at 8.9%, though that has come down from 9% level, that should come down even further as we get more and more benefit of the MCLR cuts by the banks. Secondly, around 25% of the book is linked to repo. I think that benefit has already come to us. But what we will definitely look forward to is the reduction in the MCLR by the banks, and most of the proposals in the banks, you know, it gets renewed in the second quarter of the year once the financial results are out. So I think going forward, we should look at a 20 to 25 basis points reduction in the overall, and the incremental cost should even come down further. Add to that, we will also be doing more offshore. Offshore comes at a significant lower cost. We have good sanctions in our hand, and I think that is something that we should capitalize on in the next couple of months.
Should reflect in our margins.
Yeah. So that would definitely add to the NIM expansion, coupled with the better yield from here on.
That's quite in detail. So, one thing on the guidance front, so as such means, so considering the credit cost, we have guided for 270 to 290 bps in this year, but so what kind of credit cost do we expect in FY27 as well? I mean, so here the credit cost should be on a downward trajectory, so can it settle around 2.5, or like how should we look at it from a steady state perspective? Yeah.
So as you know, our mix would be changing, the mix in favor of direct to retail, and definitely direct to retail will have a higher amount of credit cost. So we will be in the range of 2.7 to 2.8% in FY27, but 28 onwards, I think we should see a slight reduction to around 2.5 to 2.6%. That is how we have given guidance in the past as well, and we stick to that guidance.
Just to add to that, obviously with the retail, the mix change, there will be expansion in NIM as well, sure. And that sufficiently covers the increasing credit cost.
So from an ROA standpoint, so in FY27, can we be looking at around 3.5% ROA, or how is it?
Yeah, we should be looking at those numbers, and that is how we should reach to close to 4% by FY28.
Sure, that is very helpful. Yeah, I'll join back in the queue. Thank you, and all the best. Yeah.
Thank you. That was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you all very much. Thanks, Chintan. Thank you, moderator, for really managing it well. Thank you all for joining late on Tuesday evening. Really appreciate for your support and very insightful questions. Have a great day and a great year ahead. Thank you.
On behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.